the ball is caught by Boquist, and he does an inverted twist. Is he in? He is. Touchdown, Bo Boquist, and that could be your dagger.
Simon Rumpfo has it. Simon inside the five. Sis boom ball. Simon Rumpfo, his second touchdown today.
UND Football 360.
Isaiah trying to get outside, a stiff arm, shuts him down, 20, inside the 15, down to the 13-yard line. Oh, that right arm, that stiff arm, and the book of Isaiah has given North Dakota a first down.
Analysis, commentary, news, and a look ahead. It's all things UND football. This is the UND Football 360 Podcast with your hosts, Kelly Howe, Matt Nelson, and Dave McNamara.
New season, new players, new coaches, heck, even some new facilities. It's week one. The UND Football 360 Podcast is on the air. Tank McNamara, Kelly Howe, Matt Nelson here with you as we look to break down week one, the Cyclones. Who's excited? Anyone?
Time to get it rolling,
yeah,
Matt.
This is great. Yeah, I look forward to this day every year and getting back on 360, and it's a good time. Good time of year.
You kind of wonder where the summer went, right? I mean, week zero was fun, but now we're in week one.
Yeah, it went quick. See, I remember July 4th, and then we're sitting here. It's like, I don't know what happened there. It went quick, but no, it was a good summer, but I think we're ready for football. Last weekend, very fun. I like that you guys. Week zero was on TV. We got to see Montana State upset New Mexico after falling behind 17-0.
Was it an upset?
Probably not. No, they were favored.
Because they were favored going in.
And yeah, we'll call it an upset because it was 17-0 early.
I credit those New Mexico fans for sitting there on an August sunny day.
Wow, right.
There was plenty of good seats still available.
Program, I mean, that's not real strong.
They showed the intro from down in the field shooting up to the home sideline. Let's 25% full, 30% full on the home sideline. I was like, well, I suppose when it's 90 some degrees out, they weren't too excited to get out there either, but at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But
well, hopefully things will be a little better this Saturday, 2:30 in Ames, Iowa. It's going to be a full house. The fans always show up in Ames. I've been there. It's a fun atmosphere. Right. And you come onto the one side of the stadium and it was like, wow, they've got a few tailgaters here. And then you turn the corner and right in front of the basketball arena, it's unbelievable. And I flew down there. It took one of the guys longer to drive from the stadium to the airport than it did for us to fly home. That's right. How many people are in Ames for a game. It's about as many people that live in Ames that will be at the game on Saturday. So it's a great atmosphere and a fun test for the Fighting Hawks in week one. Our 360 podcast, we can't do it without our sponsors and Rumors Sports Bar and Grill and Casino. Really the home for UND football when you're in Grand Forks. Make sure you make it your pre and post game before UND Fighting Hawk games. And when you're in town, stop by.
Speaking of which, I was just up there last weekend.
Is the beer still cold?
It is. Okay. The beer towers were out, and we went over there after the fantasy football draft and put about a 6-7 hour shift in at Rumors and bet a ton of horses. So Development Homes Gaming, we bet 10-12 horse races, won a few. Acted like we knew what we were doing, and betting, I think we were betting Louisiana, Saratoga, Del Mar, California. Standing up there in front of the TVs trying to analyze.
If you get bored at Rumors, it's your own fault, right? Development Homes Inc., gaming, simulcast, horse racing, pull tabs, blackjack, pig wheel. You had me at gaming. Development Homes Inc. Kelly Howe Agency, never heard of him.
Right.
Nodak Insurance? Yeah. I don't know. Is he new?
I think he's a new guy,
New guy.
The Toasted Frog, some fine dining in downtown Grand Forks and Fargo, Interstate Industrial, steam cleaning and painting in the Bakken oil fields. And then Marty Shade, thank you so much. And American Solutions for Business, Tank McNamara, can help you out with your promo and apparel needs. Print can help you out with all that.
And we don't want to forget the 1883. Collective. I don't think we added it in there, but 1883 Collective is a sponsor this year, along with the Toasted Frog. And I'm hearing things are going well. guys real well with the fundraising. You see all the athletes coming out.
Yeah, update NIL. Everyone again what the 1883 is. Something new to the university.
That's their name, image, likeness, wing, arm of the school now, where it has to be private, you know, to raise funds, use the athletes to, you know, for sponsorships, and then they can get paid. So it has to be through a collective like the 1883 collective. John Holt, Matt Bonzer, they're doing a great job with it, and it's taken off. They keep signing up. You see a new athlete from whatever team on campus, you know, advertised every week, it seems like. So yeah, things are going well, and we appreciate them reaching out. We want to help them as best we can.
And that's not possible without the fans' help, right? That's how this is all going to work, the 1883, correct?
100% fans. Yeah, it's them, you know, giving back, basically, just like you give to the university now. It's the newest thing in 2024 is you give to a collective.
Yeah, what I like about it is that, you know, your $20, $30 that you might not think that would go to help the university all that much, you can go out and support the team and the player directly with your purchases and just your everyday stuff. So I think it's great for the student athletes and the university in general, and to support our guys that we like watching.
Well, we were talking the 1883, and we mentioned the new facilities. Kelly, I think you even said that's already made an impact this summer, right? Yeah, you've already seen it with recruiting.
Yeah, it's hard not to. I mean, running them through that. Running them through the indoor facility all these years obviously was big, but now you can run them into the coaches' offices, brand new coaches' offices for the first time in 120 years or whatever that number, 100 years. But all those things added together, and then the locker room will come next. And this winter, the locker room, the weight room, and the new training facility will come in December to January. And then it's all online. And the track will be done next year around the new turf. So Memorial Stadium has new turf just for practice, brand new, which is amazing because it's just for practice. They have turf inside the, you know, the indoor facility, and the grass by the train tracks has all been
which
redone.
Which they finally invested in, right? Yeah.
Recrowned. Yeah, they recrowned it, and thick, plush grass. So yeah, it's
a D1 facility, right?
I would say so. I mean, I don't know how you could argue it.
When you guys were playing there, 50, 60 years ago, did you ever imagine you'd be walking on campus to see something like this for the UND football program?
No, but it was one of the best facilities in the D2 area that I visited. So I'm like, yeah, heck yeah, I'm going here. And the Laris was being built at the same time. So facilities certainly play a role in helping kids to come there.
Well, let's dive into it, folks. Let's go through this depth chart. The depth chart is out. And I want to ask you both right away, any surprises on there? Maybe quarterback. Maybe not so much the depth chart, but who's left on the roster? Let's address that right away.
Well, Matt, there's a talker we should probably start with, and that was obviously the defection of Trey Feeney at quarterback. I mean, he was battling. He was battling for the number one spot, as everyone knows. Nobody knew who was going to win it. Yeah, Isaac Frichte comes out last week, I believe, and names Simon Romphel, the Langdon product, the starting quarterback. Jerry Kaminsky and Trey Feeney were named number two. So, all right, you know, you're kind of thinking, okay, he's going to be a backup, whatever. Well, we don't know what else was said in there, because the next day, Friday, I believe last Friday, came out, well, he quit. He quit the team. So I understand, you know, being a junior, you know, he's put 3 years in. I kind of understand, you know, frustration.
Yeah,
and
the quarterback position, too. Once you decide on a quarterback, I mean, that's pretty locked in. Unless the kid gets hurt, or if it's quarterback come by committee, which typically doesn't happen, you know, I can't blame a quarterback, especially Trey, for, hey, maybe I'm going to see greener pastures elsewhere, because, you know, it's part of the game, too. With the transfer portal, it makes it easier. And if he wasn't going to get the time that he wanted this year, you know, hats off to him and wish him the best of luck.
Yeah, but depth is, you know, I guess that could be a concern going injuries. You know, he took snaps last year. It's always nice to have a guy with some experience on your roster.
Right. And, you know, coach's kid. He's a smart kid. And he's a good kid. You know, I didn't have any ill will towards him, obviously, because it's a business decision. You only get 5 years.
Yep.
So if you're not playing, you kind of got to say, okay, what am I going to do where I can finish this thing out, you know, at a different level, at a different school, whatever. And he made that decision. And like we were talking about before the show came on, I'm not I'm not real sure he could have gotten a game. I kind of missed that point because he already redshirted. So the four game thing doesn't apply to him.
No.
So let's say, you know, Simon Rompho goes down. Jerry Kaminsky comes in. He goes down. He gets blindsided. Trey Feeney has to come in. Great. Okay. Good for UND. But bad for Trey Feeney. Now, so I hope someone corrects me if after you hear this. But because that redshirt year was used, and I don't know, does a COVID year apply? Does a random COVID year apply?
Let's see, he came in because his senior year, they didn't get to play for a state title. They were appointed. COVID. So yep. That was COVID. So I don't know if he probably doesn't have a COVID year, does he?
That's what I'm debating, whether he could play, but then use his one-time transfer, not get dinged for this year. I wasn't ever clear on that. So if that is the case, then I understand why he didn't want to say, okay, I can't chance having to go in there for two quarters of one game, and then all of a sudden Simon Rompho is okay the next game, and he never plays again the rest of the year, and he loses a full season. Nah, okay, I get it. But, yeah, it's tough for UND, though. Let's look at the quarterback room. I mean, we're down Rompho, Kaminsky's two. He's never played before. So we got a freshman at number two, and then you got Henkes and Sulik. Well, Henkes is a freshman himself, second-year kid out of I believe around St. Cloud area, and transfer from Mary. And then Sulik's a true freshman. So the backups are three freshmen now, guys. And Simon Rompho's never played before. Other than, you know, he caught a few snaps and ran it in last year type of thing. But, yeah, it's a young room. I mean, Coach Frickdy's got his work cut out for him.
What do you think they'll do in quarter one for Rompho because of that? You think it'll be a pretty simple play calling, just to get everyone acclimated right away?
I think he's running the ball.
Yeah,
I don't think we're going to try to get any bells and whistles and, you know, go deep in the playbook, straight up zone blocking probably, and see what we can do and see how we match up against Iowa State next week or this weekend, because there's a lot of unanswered questions.
Yeah, we're going to get into that later, but after seeing Trey leave the program, it changes my mind on how you want to play Simon Rompho. Yeah.
Let's talk about the rest of the depth chart. Quarterback was an easy one, but any other areas that jump out to you guys just looking at it right off the bat?
Well, offensive line. You know, that was the big talker coming in, and it's what we thought it was in our preseason show that we did. Caleb Olson, that's a kid I'm most proud for, the Lisbon product out of North Dakota, starting at right guard. He's worked hard. That kid, I've heard he was doing good. You know, 2 years ago they were mentioning his name. He's not ready yet, but we love the kid. Hard worker, up and coming, you know, type of kid. And sure enough, here he is starting at right guard. So that's good. You know, Bucks and Gorder will be at center. I think they'll both play. It's going to be the type of game where I think you see some guys running in, you know, a different every two series they might change a guy at center or change a guy at right guard, that type of thing. Seth Anderson will obviously be at tackle, but Beecher, I think Beecher won, you know, Liam Beecher won the left tackle job, and he's over Trace Thaden. Now, I could see Thaden getting in the game too, just in case Beecher, you know, getting overwhelmed, getting tired. He's a, you know, first year playing, and he's back home. Now he's an Iowa kid, so he's going to be a little juiced up, probably a little mentally, you know. I mean, so why not put Thaden in?
And that's one thing. That's a great word, Kelly, overwhelmed, because this isn't going to be an easy place to play. You got a brand new offensive line that probably hasn't taken a ton of reps together because of all the, you know, shuffling around to see who's going to play. What kind of challenges do you think that'll bring for them early on in that game?
Well, yeah, of course. And recent memory, you know, when we went down to Nebraska, the guys handled it pretty well. I mean, we didn't get distracted. They came out and played. So hopefully we can channel some of that we had, some of those guys that were down there in Nebraska. Tough atmosphere to play. It's going to be very similar down in Ames. But hopefully we can channel some of that and limit the distractions a little bit. But there's a lot of young guys, too, that might have some deer in the headlights looks coming in, and especially with the tailgating, the pomp and circumstance of the Big 12 and all of that. But hopefully, you know, our coaches do a good job and keeping the guys locked in and ready to go.
Well, there's going to be, I looked last year, Northern Iowa opened there last year. It was a 30-9 win for Iowa State. 58,000 was the attendance. And then so I looked, I think it was a week, 2 weeks later was Iowa. Iowa came to town, and that was 61,000. So it pretty much sold out for Northern Iowa the first week. Now, hype is much higher this year than it was last year, in my opinion, down there. So I'm guessing it's going to be close to 60,000 is about what they get. So these kids got to be ready, and it's going to be loud, and they drink hard down there. And so they're going to be amped up, you know, 2:30 game. It's going to be hot.
Normal Midwesterners, you know? I suppose.
Yeah. There's going to be mistakes up front. You know, we know it, but that's fine. You know, you just want to see these kids, you know, just play hard. You know, don't be just loose.
Might compliment Rompo a little bit with his ad lib that he's got to do, because, yeah, he does have the feet. We did see that. Probably not many other surprises on the offensive side when you look at this thing, is it?
No, receiver is kind of what I thought it was going to be. They're going to bring, because you can bring, there's no roster limits for the FBS game. So they're not, I mean, they're not bringing the whole team, obviously, because it's not feasible, but they're going to bring about almost 10 receivers, I think. So they're going to bring a lot of them because they have a lot of them. And I think they want to just give them all. Maybe some will be on special teams, something like that. But that's it. That was an interesting thing I saw. And then, you know, transitioning to the other side of the ball, you know, the cornerback position and safeties, Erkman and Jet Sutton. Name the starters at safeties. That was interesting. Both young. Neither of them have started before. So we're going to get into our game preview later, but they're going against two of the best receivers in the Big 12 in this game. So
baptism by fire.
Yeah, Hembree and Bluette are the starting corners. No surprise there. But once again, Hembree is the only one with game experience out of those four that I just named. So, you know, I think the depth chart kind of is what we thought it was, other than the big talker quarterback.
You know, you don't see a lot of this, especially in week one, maybe a preseason depth chart, but there's a lot of oars on the twos and the threes. Does that concern you guys, or does that be like, wow, give you a little more optimism that it's that close for playing positions right now?
It gives me a little bit more confidence that we have a couple guys that are able to play. You know, we're a little bit more injury prone that way. And you know, I think it's common for O-line. You know, we've seen that in multiple years previously, where it's like, well, this guy or that guy, it depends on the scheme. Sometimes it is a scheme thing, where this guy is just better matched against the offense or defense coming into the game, where that happens a lot on defense, especially where this guy is just a better fit for that role in this game.
Down at Nebraska, I know there were a few freshmen that didn't play, you know, as well as UND needed them to, if I recall correctly, and they're freshmen.
Yeah.
And it happens. So then what they do, you shuffle in the older kid who can probably handle it, maybe not as talented, but just can handle the environment a little better, didn't get overwhelmed. Like, we got those. In the secondary, you got the two West Virginia State transfers, Avery Scott, Jai Martin. They've both done well. So I could see them. I mean, they've played before. I don't know how big a stadium they've ever played in. I don't know if that matters, but they've played before. So I could see them, you know, doing, because UND in the past has shuffled corners. You know, so I don't see youth being a huge deal until it is, type of thing. You know, you just don't worry about it until you see someone, hey, God, they look nervous out there. Let's give them a break. You know, give them a breather, tell them to watch from the sideline for a series, see if they're okay, that type of thing, which is what I think they could do on offensive line, too.
Special teams?
Yeah.
No surprises there?
What do we got? Kick return was interesting. Sawyer Seidel. You know, looks like he's going to return kicks. We weren't quite sure there in the preseason. Donovan Hunt, the speedster transfer out of Jackson State, will back him up. Bo Belquist, punt returning. Not super jazzed up. I give my speech every year about when John Santiago is returning kicks. Yeah. I'm like, I know he's good at it. I get it. But he's also really good at playing running back. It's like, you know, as soon as he gets hurt, it all takes is one
and that's what you
see,
especially in a big game at a crucial time. It's like, oh.
But Bo can catch it.
Yeah.
You know, just fair catches.
Yeah,
or
fair
catches
I'm okay with. But,
you know, eight yard return, go down type of thing, whatever, just catch it. You know, and UND does a great job. I don't think I can remember a time they fumbled, muffed a punt. It's been a long
better
time.
Better knock on wood, Kelly.
Yeah,
come on.
There we go.
You don't want to be the reason everyone not listens to us next year.
Right. But, yeah, this depth chart. Yeah, kind of tight end is what we thought it was. Defensive line is what we thought it was. A youth movement up there a little bit. He's inside linebacker. They're all back, you know, type of thing. So
let me ask you this on the depth chart this year. Who do you see on there right now that when they were recruited, you were like, oh, boy, I can't wait to see them out on the field? Is there any that stick out to you right now on this depth chart?
Well, Sawyer Seidel. He jumps on. I want to see more of him, see what they can do, you know, a screen game type of thing. I mean, I think running in this one's going to be a little harder, so I'm not worried about saying. But, yeah, some kind of a flash out of him, kick returns. He's the guy that everyone could not. Last year when they put him in there, I think it was Murray State, he really flashed. He looked good. Geez, I don't know, Matt. Who are we looking
for? Well, I wouldn't be against having Jerry get out there for a couple series, too, being a freshman, you know, late in the game, give him a couple snaps, couple series in the fourth quarter, no matter how the game is going, just to see how he performs in that level and get him that experience.
Let him throw.
Yeah.
If you put him in, you might as well let him throw.
Right. I think, you know, where we have nothing to lose, we're expected not to win this game. I think, you know, get him some experience. So in 2 years or 3 years when he is in this, when do we have Nebraska next? Next year or the year after?
Is K-State next year?
K-State.
Yeah. And then Nebraska must be coming up after.
Yeah, the year after. Anyway, doesn't matter today, but
all cupcakes, right?
Right. Yeah. It's all cupcakes, but I'd like to see Jerry out there for a series or two, or maybe a quarter, if we can.
Well, let's move along. It is the Development Homes 360 guest here on UND Football 360 podcast as we get ready for Saturday's game in Ames against Iowa State. Well, look at that. We have the ISU play-by-play announcer, John Walters, on the line with us right now. And, John, it looks like you're no stranger to college football. Over 20 years behind the mic?
Yeah, this will be my 22nd season calling Iowa State games on radio, and I've been around it for even longer than that. I mean, I go all the way back to the Johnny Orr days as far as being around Iowa State. So, it's been a fun ride, and time flies when you're having fun.
That's quite the roller coaster over 20 years in Iowa State football. You've seen a lot of highs and a lot of lows in that time, I bet.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, I think that's one of the things that makes this fan base so unique and special, that they continue to fill a stadium year after year, regardless of, you know, you obviously want to win, but I think you enjoy the wins a lot more if you've dealt with some adversity and some losses through the years, too. And Iowa State fans have plenty of scars to prove that they've had the years where it hasn't gone very well. But that makes you hopefully really enjoy the victories that much more and understand how special it is when you are able to get it rolling like Iowa State's been able to do with Matt Campbell. And so you don't take that stuff for granted. I think at some places where you win all the time, it just is, you never really enjoy the wins because it's just that's the way it's supposed to be. And, I think at a place like Iowa State, you definitely enjoy each victory and certainly enjoy each season that goes well.
Well, we talked about the highs and the lows, and right now you said it, you're at a high. What's been the key to the success lately for Iowa State?
Well, I think Matt Campbell, and, you know, the term culture just gets thrown around so loosely in college football. Every coach claims, hey, we have a culture. We've got a culture. It's all about culture. Well, there's good cultures and bad cultures, okay? But Matt Campbell has, honest to God, he has created this environment where guys come in every day really excited about, you know, playing for Iowa State. And Matt doesn't just give lip service to the idea that, hey, we're in it for the development of these young people as men. It's not just about the results, the scoreboard, the winning and losing. It's about developing good young people and maxing out what kind of player they can be, but also maxing out what kind of person they can be. And he doesn't just say it. I mean, he really lives it. And so I think that environment has created a very positive thing. Obviously, he's been really good at upgrading the recruiting, but it's still a developmental program. I mean, they go get the guys that maybe get overlooked a little bit and develop those 2- and 3-star guys into players that are at a 4-star ability by the time they're done. And that's been the kind of the secret formula to their success. But it's a lot of hard work, and it doesn't come easily. And, you know, even though it is a high, it's not like Iowa State's been going 12-0 every year. So they still are hopefully on the upswing and can go compete for a Big 12 championship maybe as early as this season.
John, this is Matt. Thanks for coming on the show today. I have a follow-up to that. I looked at your transfer portal and some of the guys that you lost and some of the guys that you got in. Do you feel that everything you said has also helped with that transfer portal? Because we talk about it all the time, that we lose guys to even Big 12 and Big 10, a lot of guys we lose. Has it helped Iowa State in retaining some of those players and even attracting some of those guys from the FCS?
Yeah, I'd say overall the portal has been better to Iowa State than it's been an infringement on what they're trying to do. I would say that, but at the same time, Matt Campbell is not hung up on the portal. He really will probably take 6-7 guys in a given year out of the portal. We'll probably lose about that same amount. Most of those guys through the years have transferred to a level where they can get more playing time. And you certainly understand that. You want guys to find the level where they're able to have happiness and experience a great career. But at the same time, what I found to happen with Iowa State recruiting in the last period was that a lot of programs around the country at the FBS level were saying, hey, we want to hang on to 8, 9, 10 scholarships because we know there's going to be a lot of guys going into the portal and we want to be there and be ready to take some of those guys and be able to offer them scholarships. Well, what that does is it increases the talent pool of high school players that are out there. And Matt, you know, toward the end of the recruiting period, really when it was just about at the finish, said to his staff, hey, who are the best high school players out there that have been kind of overlooked, that we're on the verge of offering, but we haven't offered? And they identified some guys, and some of those guys have turned into really good recruits. And so I think, you know, there's a flip side to it. If you get too caught up in the portal and trying to save a bunch of scholarships for those guys, you really weaken your pool of high school players that you're getting, and you strengthen the pool for some teams you're competing against. And I think Iowa State's been able to take advantage of that, especially in recent years.
Hey, John, transitioning to the task at hand this week, let's talk about your quarterback, Rocco Becht. 6'1", you know, so as we were joking here, is he 6'1" or is he 6'? Because our quarterback's about 5'11", and we started to joke. I mean, it's going to be a battle this week of shorter, let's call it, not short quarterbacks, but shorter, non-typical quarterbacks, right, Matt?
Yeah, it's WWE numbers. So they're 6'4", but they're listed at 6'10".
Right, and Rocco Becht is not the prototypical 6'7", NFL huge arm quarterback. And yet at the same time, he's taller than I am. I know that. I'm 5'10".
All right.
He's really about the same size as Brock Purdy. So if that can give you a visual, okay. He's really got pretty much the same dimensions as Brock did. And but a young guy that got kind of thrown into the starting role a year ago and really made the most of that opportunity, and is really excited to see what he can do after being Big 12 Offensive Freshman of the Year a year ago.
Now, speaking of the offense, you got a new offensive coordinator this year. But he stayed from the in-house, I believe. He was on the staff. So was there any change that you've heard of with the offense, or did they kind of keep it the same, being you had so many pieces coming back and he was already on staff? I believe Taylor Mauser, is that his name?
Yeah, Taylor Mauser has been with Matt Campbell, even like as a grad assistant, going all the way back to their days at Toledo. And Taylor's a guy who's kind of earned promotions throughout his time at Iowa State, point where he is now the offensive coordinator. Matt loves to promote from within whenever he can, and Taylor's a bright young guy. He's 33 years old, and I don't think he'll reinvent the wheel, but at the same time, I do think he'll put his own touches on this offense. And I think with the, you know, you look at Iowa State and what they have back, and I think a strength offensively for them right now is Jalen Noel and Jaden Higgins, two of the better receivers in the Big 12, and I think and Coach Mauser would like to take a few more shots down the field. Iowa State was pretty conservative, although, you know, they still had 11 touchdowns of 50-plus yards a year ago. So they did end up hitting some explosive plays, but a lot of those were on underneath things that just kind of got blocked well and turned into big plays. I think they'd like to take some more shots down the field and maybe stretch out defenses a little bit, and that's something that we could see under Taylor Mauser. But, you know, Iowa State's not going to ever look completely different in the Matt Campbell era. They're still going to try to have a balance between the run and the pass. They're going to use the tight ends, and they want quarterbacks that can think on their feet and keep plays alive with their feet and keep their eyes upfield and still be a dual threat. So that's who they are, and that's what they've tried to be and will continue to try to be under Taylor Mauser.
John Walters, our guest, the radio play-by-play voice for Iowa State as UND Iowa State get ready to kick off this Saturday. Well, John, just staying on the offensive side here, is there a prerequisite that you have to be 320 pounds to play on the offensive line for Iowa State? Holy cow. That's quite the average you have up front.
And 6'9".
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, in 2024, it seems like that 90 across the offensive line, and a 300-pounder was considered a big guy. Now 300 is a lightweight, you know. So it's just the strength and conditioning programs and the nutrition, and the I just think human beings in general are getting bigger and bigger. But, yeah, Iowa State has plenty of size along that offensive line. And that's an area that has to improve. You know, they were really good at times a year ago, but they were inconsistent. And that's an area where they really want to see more consistency. Because I think Iowa State, we talked about Rocco Becht, if they can get a more consistent ground game where they can, you know, have their floor be in 70 or 80 yard rushing day instead of, you know, the bowl game against Memphis, they didn't rush for any yards at all. You know, they need to have their bad day be that 80-yard day and their good day still be that 270-yard day as a team. And that kind of balance, I think, could really help Rocco Becht to do his thing and have a great season. But if Iowa State becomes predictable and has to throw it a lot, then it's a lot harder for Rocco to be effective. So that's the big challenge for the offensive line this year, is to be more physical, to create those holes on a more consistent basis. And some of it falls on the running backs, too, to hit those holes when they're there. That was a very young room a year ago. And so we'll see if Iowa State's able to establish a more consistent run game. But I think that's a real key to the success of Iowa State's season.
Switching sides of the ball, John. The defense, I'm seeing a unique defense when I was watching tape on these guys. I'm seeing some 3-3-5, it looks like, at times. Like five DBs at all times. And they go down to a 4-down, maybe a 4-2-5 type of look. John Heacock, a former Youngstown State coach, as a defensive coordinator. Can you kind of describe that defense and how they run that thing? And specifically, you know, Bo Freeler, I believe, is he the middle safety? Is he the roamer that's kind of the fifth guy, you'd call it, in that defense?
It's a great observation on your part. Yeah, Bo is kind of almost like a hybrid linebacker safety type guy. And he is that middle safety, but he's really big in run support, and he'll come up at 220 pounds physically and try to provide a lot of run support. And that safety room is certainly the strength for Iowa State defensively. Malik Verdon, Bo Freeler, and Jeremiah Cooper are all Big 12 caliber type of players on that back end. And, you know, Coach Heacock, several years ago, when the coaching staff was new to Iowa State and they were competing in the Big 12, and it was a little bit more of a pass-happy league back then, they really felt like, hey, the best way to compete is to get our best players on the field, and let's go three down linemen and play three safeties and five defensive backs at all time and still bring pressures from different places but not have it be predictable. They try to be as multiple as they can. And it's worked really well. Coach Haycock's defense has seven straight years have been in the top three in the Big 12 in scoring defense. And so the league has shifted a little bit now. It's more of a physical power league, more of a running league. But I think this defensive look still has been tough to run against. And I think that's a pivotal thing for Iowa State this year. Can they be elite in rushing defense? Last year they were good, allowing about 130 yards a game. But John Haycock's best defense is they've been allowing about 100 yards a game. And if this group, which I think it can get to that point, then you make offenses more predictable and one-dimensional, and that's when Iowa State can really excel defensively. But, yes, that three-safety look is something that Iowa State's been going with for about seven or so years, and it's been very effective.
Well, I think that's – I don't know if we got anything else, guys. That was I think we feel have a good feel for what Iowa State does. Yeah. John, you right. do a nice yeah. job that's describing
awesome.
It.
And
John, I see your pick six in the Big 12 with 16 teams this year. Is that where you have them going into the season?
You know, I'm hopeful for more, but I think that's not an unflattering prediction for Iowa State. It is going to be a wide-open Big 12. I think it's going to be probably the most fun league to follow of the FBS leagues because it's going to be so unpredictable, and it really has been for several years. People think, well, Texas and Oklahoma dominated it, and Oklahoma to a certain degree did, but Texas, until just recently, really struggled to do that. And, you know, you go back and look at the teams that have participated in the Big 12 championship games. If you go back and look at the last 4 or 5 years, it's about 7 or 8 different programs that have been in that conference championship game. And now with the additions of Arizona and Colorado and Utah and Arizona State and, you know, what they added a year ago, I think that it's just one of those leagues where you could make a strong argument for 7 or 8 different teams to get into the conference championship. I think Iowa State can be one of those teams, and a big key, guys, for Iowa State to do that is their last two games on their schedule are at Utah and Kansas State at home. Those are the teams that were picked 1-2 in the preseason poll. If Iowa State can get to those last two games, kind of in control of their own destiny, then I'd feel great about that. You know, it's like, okay, now you got to go prove it on the field, but at least you've put yourself in that position to be in contention for the conference championship. And I think that's not unrealistic that Iowa State could be at that point heading into those last 2 weeks of the regular season.
John, I see that you guys travel to the Evil Empire next week in Iowa City. Selfishly, I hope you look past this week against us and then start practicing for Iowa.
One group of Hawks at a time.
Right, yeah. Yeah, any early predictions for that one?
Oh, that'll be a physical, tough game. It always is. And I think this week's game is going to be a physical, tough game. I think that's what North Dakota hangs its hat on. They want to run the football. They have very good running backs, and they want to be physical up front. And I think that's a good week one look for Iowa State to face heading into a game against Iowa because they're going to get a lot of the same type of approach from the Hawkeyes for sure. That's always a physical, low-scoring game. You know, probably first team to 14 wins.
Well, John, looks like UND has their hands full on Saturday. And after visiting with you, I know the job's not going to be any easier for UND. Have a great call Saturday. Over 20 years in the booth. I've been to Ames, Iowa. Great atmosphere. And UND should have a great time down there. Best of luck this season and have a good call Saturday.
Thanks so much. I've heard there's a lot of UND fans coming down. I think that's awesome. I hope they have a great experience in Ames and at Jack Trice Stadium. And I expect a really well-played football game from both teams. I think this Iowa State program has a ton of respect for North Dakota and what they've accomplished, what they did last year. And so I think it'll be a really good test in week one. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Take care, John.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, let's move along now to the Toasted Frog game preview. It's the 360 game preview. Iowa State, 2:30 kickoff, and pregame coverage on your radio dial starts at 1:30. National TV coverage on FS1 on Saturday. You know, we've been talking about some of the new staff and the new players. How would you like to be Isaac Frickte and scripting your first 20 plays for Saturday? Would that be a chore right now?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you could script them, but I don't know if you know how the game's going to go.
But yeah, I mean, there's so many question marks. And, oh, by the way, you're also playing at Iowa State that is pretty good defensively.
Right, in front of 55,000 people with a bunch of guys that have never played a snap in a college football game. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting, and it's a nice challenge, too, I mean, for our team. Let, you know, a little baptism by fire for some of the players and Isaac, and I'm excited to see what we got.
You think it'll be a little... I hate to use the word vanilla, but maybe the first two series?
Oh, yeah. Yep, I think you're going to see some zones, you know, inside-outside zone. I know, like, we alluded to it in the preseason show, but Trevor Olsen is really good at running packages. Really good. He's kind of a design guy, technician guy, behind the scenes. He likes to come up with new, and that's kind of the thing now in football is new wave blocking schemes up front where we're using the tight ends, using the fullbacks, that type of thing, and so I think what you're going to see is some, you know, some stuff with some combo blocking up front, some gap stuff, just things to try to get an edge somewhere to move the ball. I mean, because there's no way we can show up and say we are going to push them off the ball. Nah, I don't think that's going to happen. It's just we're too young. They're too big. Matt, you were alluding to it. What were you seeing there?
Their D-line, yeah. D-line are dudes. I mean, they got two big – they're almost 300 pounds. But
yeah.
It's not like a O-lineman left tackle 300 pounds. It's like a 6'4" in your stack.
Try and move me.
Right.
300.
Yeah. I mean, they got some dudes on D-line. So, I mean, it's going to be certainly a challenge for our offensive line.
6'4", 295. Yeah. 6'2", 305. 6'4", 325.
Yeah, they're – and I looked at some of their plays and the guys actually out on the field. And, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. Their defense is good. So, yeah.
And we touched on it in the preseason show, but UND fans can expect a little different look offensively at times this year. We're going to see some things that we're not quite used to, right, Kelly?
Yeah, I think he'll bring in.
Huddle a little bit, you said?
Yeah, he's got the 4-minute, 2-minute, and hyper speed. You know, so it's going to be no huddle the whole time. We know that, which is interesting. But you also have to understand, you know, what you're up against. He's not stupid. So it's not like they're going to be in a hurry, no huddle. It's just to get up to the line. And sure, you know, in a game like this, do you try to steal a play? Sure, they might get up there and all of a sudden just run it because they're going to try to steal 4 yards from you. You know, catch you in a running something that you're advantageous to who you have in the game. You know, that type of thing is what I could see him doing, because with the young O-line, the blocking up front and just the consistency, you don't know. You don't know how it's going to go. And we'll see what Isaac Frickte, you know, we'll see what he's made of. You know, we'll see what the mental side, how quick he adjusts in game to what he's seeing defensively, what he's seeing from his own unit, that where only Seth Anderson's the only O-line we've played before.
How tough is that defensively to play in week one when you're going against a team that has some new staff, has new players, maybe a different – you have really no idea what you're to expect. Is it hard to adjust on the field?
I'd say yes and no, because yes, it is difficult because you have no idea what you're going to see. But then no, because, okay, we're going in with a regular base check defense, and whatever we get and rely on the training that you've done the years previous and all
you
fall
can play.
Camp.
Just do
just
your
line
job,
up and
right?
play and get your checks and just pin your ears back. So that part is easier, but yeah, just not knowing, you know, the fear of unknown, I think, is it gives you some anxiety. But yeah, so it's, you know, 50-50, really, in my opinion.
That's what's kind of fun about week one, all
it
the
is,
unknowns,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
I mean, I'm glad I'm not a sports gambler, because week one, I might lose the bank for the year.
Right.
My luck, that would
either
happen.
Bahamas condo or Sunnyvale.
Food line, yeah.
I've done that before, guys. I went heavy week one in, like, during the day as it's going on. Jeez, I really like this one. 2:30 comes around. And all that around. Night games are coming up. Well, at the end of the day, it's like, oh boy, I might need to be depositing again here by next
I'd
week.
I'd like to do these 9 o'clock, but I'm broke. Yeah,
like Cal Poly's and Davis at 9 o'clock. Oh, yeah.
The depth of Iowa State isn't pretty for UND. I mean, they pretty much got too deep that can play the whole game, right?
Well, yeah. And the other thing, I looked at their secondary. You know, they play three safeties, two corners. Bo Freeler, the key to their defense. He's their, you know, you want to call him monster back type of thing. They move him all over the field. So he's the middle safety of the three safeties, which is highly unusual. But he's the one that you have a trouble accounting for when you're in the offensive line, because he's not in your he's not in the box. He's not in your view. Then he is in your view. Okay, then that's where I think the tight ends, fullbacks, maybe even running back need to pick him up, you know, when they bring him in pressure. But the one thing I'm seeing from Iowa State, they're not a high-pressure team. You know, they line up like that. It's more of a defensive scheme, literally defensive. Like, they're just playing defense back. They're not going to give up anything big, but they're going to come up 100 miles an hour as soon as they identify the play type of thing. And last year, they only had 24 sacks. So 13 games, 24 sacks. That's not, you know, a high-pressure team. Now, they had 69 tackles for loss. So, I mean, now the number's getting up there. So that tells me, okay, There were probably a lot of running. A lot of running plays. Yeah, they fly up fast, okay? So it's interesting, 16 interceptions. So they're ball hawks. But one of the safeties, Malik Verdon, who John referenced in our interview, 6'4", 220. Safety. Holy, I mean, that is a big dude back there roaming around. I mean, you got to watch out what's happening. So he can match up with tight ends easy, that type of thing.
Wow, so I look at the noise, a lot of new guys, and now you got to account for guys. Every play, know where they're at, if they're going to be mixing around. That just adds more fuel to the fire, doesn't it?
Yeah, they're not lining up in your typical 4-3. You know, like when you play an NDSU or something, they're going to line up four down. And they might bring a backer, you know, type of thing. Not a high-pressure team either. But you just have to identify what you're seeing by the alignment of the defensive line, I believe, Matt. I mean, so when you're playing this team, though,
yeah,
they're not a high-pressure team, but there's eight of them off the line, though. And you don't know who's flying up and where Freeler is.
Yeah, one maybe silver lining, too, is that they do line up in a 3-4 similar to the defense that we run. So it's going to be a somewhat of a similar look than what they see all spring ball and all fall camp, you know, when you're scrimmaging against your own team, that three-man front. But, you know, it's what we do with those linebackers that's key. And that's one of their strengths of their team, too, that they've noted on multiple different forums, that their linebacker core is strong. And they like Kelly said, they do fly around to the football. So they're going to cause us headaches a little bit.
Taking a look at their offense, we've talked about Rocco Beck, and not a tall guy, got experience, but can he win a game? If you had to put it on his shoulders, is he that good?
He seems like that type that could keep you in it, you know, and maybe get you that drive, be just from moxie and, you know, good player type thing, veteran kid.
Doesn't make a lot of mistakes.
You know, veteran after on playing 1 year, but he was the freshman player of the year. So now he's a veteran. Yeah, I don't think they would ever put him in that position. You know, he's not David Klingler, Andre Ware. I mean, he's not going to just fly down the field, start throwing, you know, but he seems pretty good, pretty solid. What I want to call their offense, what you're going to see on Saturday, is a deliberate offense. They're going to line up. They're going to look like us, you know, 11 personnel. You're going to see a tight end. Tight end's really good with Ben Brommer, 6'7 kid. He's pretty good. Yeah, oh, geez, I mean. We just keep mentioning guys that are big and lengthy and athletic, but they got them. So they're real deliberate, though. They're going to run the ball on us if they think they can. They're just going to keep running it. Then they'll take their shot to the wide receivers we'll get to in a second. But, yeah, it's Iowa-esque offense.
What you thinking about Iowa football is what you're going to get.
They're trying to win the game. They're not trying to win the box score. You know, is the best way to put it, but it's good. You know,
control the line of scrimmage. Yep. Don't turn the ball over. Very, clock management.
Run the ball.
Yeah. Very cliched game, I think. You know, just
but they're good at
line
it.
Up. Yeah, they're going to line up and make us beat them, and that's the style of football that we're going to see again.
Well, the two receivers I mentioned,
Higgins.
Yeah, Noel and Higgins. Oh boy, those guys, they're good. One, you know, Higgins is 6'4", 215. Noel's a smaller guy. He's a return man, too, 5'11", 200. Very good. They had 900 and 800 yards last year, respectively. So we're going to have our hands full with those guys, too. You know, Hembree's played for us at corner. That'll help. Bluette played a little bit last year, but he's still young. They're going to be – when they want to attack, I think they're going to feel like they can attack just on, you know, depth chart alone, just because these are two of the best receivers in the Big 12. So – yeah, we're going to have our hands full. And I think one, you know, we talked about how big their O-line is. If we transfer to the O-line, it's not a strength, though. It's not. You know, they have issues up front. They've had, they're big kids.
They're too big?
Well, you could say
that happens. Yeah.
330 is a big boy.
Yeah, whose team was it last year? Was it Youngstown, where they were huge? They were probably the biggest O-line that we played, but their feet were slow, so we were able to take advantage of it. And I think we have a little bit of that here, and a couple different rosters that I've looked at. They have them listed at 6'7", another one had them at 6'9", both tackles. So, I mean, they're big boys, but they're also, no matter how athletic you are, you kind of move a little slower.
Yeah, I mean, we've got 330, 330, 320, 320, 330. Okay, so it's huge, and they're not bad, but I mean, I would call them a middle of the road Big 12 offensive line. They had issues last year. They gave up some sacks, but I think we got to move up front. That's what. That's why we move up front. That's why the 3-4 does what it does with the way we run it, with the slanting, the angling, all that stuff, twisting. A lot of twisting games up front.
And you're more optimistic about the line up front this year for UND defense?
I am.
Yeah, I am. I think we're solid on our D-line.
Well, athletic. The defensive ends will be young, but they'll have, Tyken, Moore, Miles Terry, the transfer. Grady Kench, the transfer from Linfield. We're going to be more athletic up front, but we don't want to be going straight ahead this week. I mean, you can't just, all right, take them on, you know, because they're just going to mow you if you don't move.
Right.
We got to be moving. We got to be bringing, you know, left, bringing an inside backer constantly, you know, type of thing to create havoc. And I think we're going to get in there. It's just, do we get home? Does Beck get rid of it before we get there? Because this is a game against an offense. When I say it's a deliberate offense, that tells me Joel Schwenzfeier is going to be bringing pressure because he knows what he's kind of going to get up front. So that's when we bring pressure. It's when you face the Eastern Washingtons and stuff like that. You can't bring pressure because the ball's out so quick.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. You know, so you just back off and you drop seven all the time. Well, this one, we're going to bring some pressure. If they get through, we're in business. Now, last year we had trouble bringing them down at times too. We got through and then we missed them. Like I think it was NDSU, Cam Miller, when he evaded that one and hit the kid down the sideline. But things like that. So, it'll be interesting. A lot of talkers in this one, but I think we could sit here all day. We don't know, because nobody knows what's going to happen.
You know, it's something you don't see a lot, a grass field. What does that play into this game?
Well, let's look at their mentality, Matt. You know, we just said deliberate offense.
For UND, though.
It's not a surprise, that it's slow. It just plays slower, doesn't it?
When you watch
a game on grass?
It seems like it, yeah. It probably not, but... I mean, probably not. It seems like it.
Guys might slip, or guys that are not as confident or something. So it feels like it's more of a, I don't know, just isn't as fast.
Your footing isn't as sure. I don't know.
Right.
It's like running on carpet versus, you know, like running outside in the yard, right? I mean, that's what it is.
Especially week one, you know the field's going to be in tremendous shape.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
If this was November, be another story, you know, if they've had a couple rainstorms and Ames throughout the year, field's been ripped up. So field conditions shouldn't be too bad. Heat?
No, 83.
83, that's almost perfect, isn't it?
Light winds, 2:30 in the afternoon.
Unless we go down and pull a Bull Durham and turn the sprinklers on before, night before the game.
But probably they'll probably work on hydration this week to avoid cramping in that weather.
Oh, yeah, there'll be some cramping. If I remember Nebraska, I think there was some. We had some issues with that.
Doc Phil Johnson says pickle juice. Drink pickle juice. Yeah,
there we go.
I've been loading the guys up this week with pickle juice.
Marathon runners do that same thing. They drink pickle juice. I don't know if it helps with cramping. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we talked special teams earlier. You brought it up when we were doing the depth chart. Special teams almost imperative that they do something in this one. Set up the offense. I mean, we alluded to it last year ad nauseum. Set up the offense somehow on the plus side.
Yeah.
You know, little things. Just no mistakes. But maybe something where Bo catches a punt, returns at 25 yards. You know, get the offense jump started a little bit. We can't have 80-yard fields all game. There's just no way. I mean, you can't do that against teams in the Missouri Valley. You know, so this one, it's going to take, I don't know, Matt, it's going to take unique.
We'll need like three good special teams plays and then a good turnover on defense, either for a score or something special to happen to keep us within reach of this one, I think.
Yeah, and we always, I don't know if we told you, Tank, but right at when we're wrapping it up, we always like to predict it. We always predict the game with score.
Jeez.
Yeah, so, I mean.
You didn't tell me this was part of the deal. Can I go in and edit this after the game?
Right, yeah. So,
well, you don't, usually it's just Kelly and I, but.
Yeah.
You can claim Switzerland if you want.
Score, I have no idea, but. You know, on paper, as much as I'd like to see us go down there and win, it's hard not to say where it's not 20 points right now, at least.
Yeah.
You know, just with the question marks.
Yeah.
yeah, I think, well, win on paper right now would be to keep it under 21, you know, but we're not playing the game on paper. That's why we go down and play it on the field. And yeah, I think there's too many question marks this time of year and inexperience in a big stadium.
Right.
Yeah. Might rattle the bell a little bit.
I don't know, against a team that's high. I mean, hopes are high in Ames, which they should be. But
I mean, if there was 15, 20 new transfers coming in and they've never played before.
What do you got for a score, Tank?
Boy, you probably got to go like 35-14, somewhere in there, you know.
Tank?
35. Yeah, I'll go 35-14.
35-14. Matt, what do you got?
I'm turning heel this year, I think. I'm going to go with probably, 42-21.
42-21 Iowa State?
Yep.
Okay, 42-21. Let me get that down.
I don't have the tingly good feeling that we had going down to Nebraska where I thought we had an opportunity there.
But yeah, it's...
This is a different ball game.
It's going to be...
It's a different game.
This one's going to be tough. Yeah, I mean, if we had... Like you said, Tank, if we had the O-line from last year, I'd feel better. You know, I mean, even though now we got a new quarterback, but they love Simon, though. I mean, they rave about it. Leadership.
I'm excited to see what they're excited about. I think the whole fan base is.
Right. Kid's a leader.
It's going to be a little different than Tommy Schuster behind center, right? We're going to see a little more.
What's interesting, they're both very quiet, apparently. You know, we knew Tommy is quiet. You know, but just confidently quiet. Well, Simon's the same way. I think he's not a big talker or whatever, but exudes leadership, won the job, kids believe in him, you know, that type. And that's all it takes. So you don't have to be talking all the time. But, yeah, I suppose it's my turn here. Oh, boy.
Well,
you know,
there's
I thought
only three
about
of
it.
Us. Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Well, I mean, I think you know, I can see a vanilla. Iowa State will be vanilla as it gets. Because they got Iowa coming up after that, so they're not going to give away anything good. That's for sure. We stop them up front a little bit, force a few punts type of thing. It's I don't know. It's just going to be tough because of our young O-line, I think, and young secondary. It's just going to be tough. And, I'm going to go 38-17, you know, something like that is what I'm thinking. So 38-17 Iowa State, I think just, you know, it'll be a good. I'm excited to see the game flow, how the offense runs, how the defense just looks in general. But we got Montana the next week. I'm more worried about Montana than I am Iowa State. We got them at home, 6 o'clock kickoff, tailgate open
season
at
opener.
11. Guys,
we've seen what happens up in Grand Forks Saturday, all day tailgates.
Wait until you see the students.
Yeah.
Oh my God, they're not going to be able to stand up.
Yeah.
You know, they're not. We've seen that before. I mean, the tailgate, they're at the end of the lot down there. It's a gong show. I mean, it's spring break.
The garbages they're mini mountains.
I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, and they're, if they make it into the game, I don't even know, you know, and stuff, but the crowd is going to be juiced up. So, I just want to see, you know, see what we see this week. And then the biggest jump a team makes, every coach says, is week one to week two. So let's see what we get this week. We'll be back here next week, able to evaluate what we saw and try to apply that to Montana.
2:30 kickoff. You can hear radio pregame coverage at 1:30. We want to thank our friends at KFGO for allowing us to use their studios to podcast this. I heard Kelly's got some pull with those guys. So
yeah.
Thank you for allowing us to get in there.
Must be blackmail somewhere.
Right.
Well, we're looking forward to it. It should be a fun one. Make sure you check out updates at undfootball360.com throughout the week. We'll hope to have the podcast up on sometime Wednesday evenings is the plan, but technology does not always allow for that. But it'll get up there. We promise.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, so enjoy the game, and we'll see you next week.